From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. As we close out our time together, Don Day from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us to look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll discuss cash rents again with guess who? That's right, Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. He's just helped the professional farm managers in the state complete a survey of their membership looking forward into 2019 and has a range of how things could change depending on the price of corn. So you want to stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media, it is Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I'd like to know, because I was paying some attention to the marketplace throughout the day today, why it is that the soybeans, which were mostly unchanged to flat for a good portion of the day, decided to drop 6 cents late in the afternoon.
Well, with about 25 minutes left, why there came a blip over the news wires that said AgriConsult says Brazil's soybean crop seen at 118.9 million tons versus the 117.5 estimated in February and the 114.6 last year. So they're kicking up there. As we lose it in Argentina, we seem to be gaining it in Brazil. And that was just a big enough number to move the market at the end of the day today.
Yeah, that would be a record breaker if I remember correctly, or at least
that would be correct.
I think we've seen that high number actually last year at some point during the season. Didn't come out that high, but Wow, that is a big crop out of Brazil. Will it continue to put pressure on, you think, through the overnight and into tomorrow's trade too?
You know, I don't know. Be absorbed. I mean, this is an estimate that way, but it does sort of make up for that. I would imagine that we would be a little bit easier in the overnight because of the way we, number one, technically how we closed tonight and now we're looking at it. But we're going to see awful thin volume come tomorrow unless there's a lot of evening up for the report on Thursday. But I would say that it's going to be a choppy two-sided trade with the bias to the downside with that kind of number out there.
On Thursday, we've got a couple of reports out at 11 a.m. We'll have those up on our website just after that on our at Commodity Week Twitter feed as well. Those are posted there now, at least some of the tabulations ahead of time. USDA in its ag forum said that we were expecting maybe 90 million acres of both corn and soybeans. The trade varies just a little bit from that. Those numbers were due out, came out in February. The trade numbers are slightly different. What do you think the trade's expecting on Thursday?
Well, the average trade estimate on corn is 89.42 and on beans 91 million. 91 million acres of beans. So, you know, you're looking at, a little, we're up, we're down like about 600,000 acres in the corn and up a million and a piece. So, I mean, it's going to be, they're looking for numbers that are just basically record numbers. I mean, the farmers are going to plant more acres of beans and have probably a bigger carryout of beans than we've seen in a long time. So, but everybody is looking for the big, big numbers. So how will they affect us when they come out?
Well, what do you think? If they do come out, actually, what happens if they don't come out and those numbers are closer to what the trade really, well, a little bit below what the trade was thinking?
You know, I mean, basically, if we come with just the 90 million acres of beans, I think it'd be a somewhat positive pop. Will we see a big pop or not? Or that sort of be questioned. But I think everybody's expecting at least 90.5 to 91 plus on the bean number as far as the acres are concerned. I think, you know, to make a real pop, though, that we'd have to look and see what the stocks that they go, are they going to stick with that 550 or will it increase or decrease from here because of the extra business? We are hoping that they will say that we might export a few more beans now because of the to possibly China for them to crush for the slow down the crush out of Argentina, that they might actually fill some of that void.
Did you see the story about ethanol and the number of gallons that have been exported to China in the last month or so? It looks like that's on an uptick too, trying to meet their energy needs.
Yes, and that's really, really positive. We know that they are trying to ramp up their own ethanol production over there, but that has really helped us here. Whether we'll be possibly selling them corn in the future to run through their ethanol plants, or whether buying ours as exports, which we really need to keep up the corn usage like that to get our carryout down under 2 billion bushel.
It's always good to talk with you. We'll talk with you again next week.
All righty. Thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, let's start with trade. The President's Special Assistant for Agriculture says the White House will do everything in its power to protect the farm sector from the impacts of potential retaliatory trade actions. Rodney Bain has more from USDA.
Our message to the agriculture community on trade: this president and this administration look forward to expanding opportunities for agriculture trade. We are open for business.
Those words from President Trump's Special Assistant for Agriculture, Ray Starling, at a recent AgriPulse event. And while Starling acknowledges nervousness by the farm sector about recent import tariff actions and potential retaliation against ag, he says that this needs to be viewed in the context of free and fair trade.
Our end game is to create a level playing field where we believe at the end of the day our farmers will be the first to benefit. If that results in retaliation against us, then that tells you something about the state of free and fair trade.
Starling adds the White House will examine trade retaliation measures on a case-by-case basis, and as they materialize, will do everything possible to protect American farmers from potential economic impacts. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Let's move from trade to the Farm Bill, where in Washington, D.C., House Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway and Ranking Member Colin Peterson kicked off the two-week congressional recess by taking jabs at one another over why Farm Bill talks are at a standstill over proposed changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. At the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Convention in Fort Worth, Conaway said Peterson has known the concept the GOP majority was pursuing for SNAP provisions of the Farm Bill since October, and the language itself since February 7th. He says, "I assumed he was working with members to socialize that. He did not. He simply told them, Conaway's just doing what Republicans did in 2013, and we don't need to be part of it." Well, Conaway said, referring to an amendment that year by former Representative Steve Sutherland, which derailed a farm bill on the House floor. The Texas Republican went on to defend the GOP proposal to tighten SNAP eligibility and work requirements, which he's not publicly released, saying it would plow a significant, unheard-of amount of money into education and job training based at the states, and anyone over 18 to retirement age who is not pregnant, disabled, or the caretaker of a child under age 6 can participate and continue receiving food stamps. "Those are the extreme partisan policies that drove my Democratic friends to the sidelines," Conaway said, referring to how Democrats have criticized the SNAP proposal, adding they don't understand the value of work. "Shame on them," he says. Peterson offered a different take, saying he tried to shield the Farm Bill from backlash. In an interview with the American Ag Network, the Minnesota Democrat said Monday that he kept the SNAP proposal under wraps because he was trying to protect the committee and Conaway from a Democratic revolt by first trying to negotiate softer language. But he and Conaway couldn't reach agreement, particularly on work requirements. And then committee Democrats demanded to see the proposed tax and cost estimates by the Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO. Now, that just made them all the more adamant, and they weren't going to support any bill that has this stuff in it, Peterson said. "So these are my members that are opposing this. It's not me." The bottom line of the story is that SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is now the holdup of the Farm Bill. And finally today, this reminder that there's still time to complete and send back your ag census. Stephanie Ho has more with Greg Bussler, who is the Wisconsin State Statistician for the National Agricultural Statistics Service.
It's not too late to turn in your completed ag census form.
Basically, we'd like farmers to get it in as quickly as possible, preferably before the end of April.
That was Greg Bussler, the USDA state statistician for Wisconsin.
Currently, the national return rate is around 50% and climbing. The better response, the stronger the data, The stronger the data, the better for producers.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
If you're a farmer and you have not yet turned in your census of agriculture, I'm sure that you've received maybe one, possibly two, new letters in the mail over the last month. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist, to talk about cash rents. This is a subject that farmers and landowners both, I think, don't like very much, but let's take it up from the professionally managed side. You work with the Society of Professional Farm Managers and have access to some of that data. What does it show you for 2018, and how can we relate that to 2019?
Yeah, so the Illinois Society does its land value effort, and we have results from that. The booklet that the Illinois Society produces is available from their website. But overall, on cash rents, what we saw is stable cash rents from 2017 to 2018. The Illinois Society divides out their rents by excellent, average, fair, and poor land qualities. And in all cases, the rents were roughly the same in 2018 versus 2017. So we've seen a leveling off of declines in cash rent in 2018.
And how much did the previous year's decline, or what kind of percentage change have we had from the highest cash rents?
So just talking about excellent productivity farmland, we saw 2013 was the highest level of farmland reported by the Illinois Society. And in that year, we saw rents at close to $400 an acre, and now this year we're looking at those rents at right at $300 per acre. So we've seen a considerable decline in rents on the Illinois on professionally managed farmland.
Does that coordinate at all with what the value of farmland might be very much?
So if you're looking at rents, generally speaking, if you're looking at rent declines, you sort of expect to see a lag relationship, but farmland prices declining as well. And we've seen that a bit. Farmland prices have come down in recent years. So we see a positive relationship between rents and prices. It's not one for one, but it's fairly close.
Now let's look forward into 2019. Do you have some expected prices and what changes we might think about in terms of cash rent by the time we get to putting those back into play in November?
So we asked the farm managers if expected corn prices for 2019 was $3.50 per bushel, what would they expect cash rents to do in 2019? Their answer was remain stable. Most of the farm managers expected remain stable to decline $5 to $20 per acre. So farm managers would say that if we see prices roughly where they're at today, we would expect to see stable to the declining cash rents. We then asked what happens if corn price happens to be $4.20, which would be considerably higher than it is now, but it's not without the realm of possibility. And in that case, 83% of them said that cash rents would be rising. So if we see those prices, we would expect rising cash rents, and sort of where we're at currently, stable to maybe a little bit of a decline in cash rent.
And not a particularly small rise either, somewhere between $5 and $50 an acre, depending
yeah,
on.
Yeah. So if we see those prices go back above $4, the professional farm managers would be looking to raise cash rents.
That's a pretty quick reaction.
Yeah, it would. Yes, it is. So
takes longer coming down than it does going up.
That's the way it usually works. There's lags in this relationship of cash rents coming down. That does present problems, obviously, for farmers, particularly those that have a lot of cash rental land and high cash rents. They're still looking at their financial position deteriorating, and you would expect to see that
going into 2019 as well.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. You can read his thoughts on cash rent right there on the website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention, as we do each Tuesday now, to the agricultural energy segment. Dan O'Brien from K-State, Kansas State University, now joins us to take a look at that. Hey, Dan, a couple quick things before we get into the energy sector. How much suffering are the wheat producers in the south and the western part of Kansas still doing?
Well, we are trying to figure that out. And what's up is that we actually have some... We have some good subsoil moisture in parts of the state, and it really varies by area. And you no doubt heard of the reports of fires in southwest Kansas. Without question, those issues are real. Rumors of winter wheat that had been seeded, perhaps going into other crops like cotton, as you go down on that border heading south. We just had some moisture. The thing that's so difficult, and you know this with your soft red winter wheat, is that boy, it's a tough crop to kill, and some of our best yields have come in years when we thought the thing was almost dead, and then we had tremendous conditions and never stressed the crop, adequate moisture, all the secondary tillers grew, and we've had some great yields out of years like that. So we're kind of in a quandary right now. I think I really think the decision to keep or stay for some 5-10% of people on the margin probably has a lot to do with what happens with prices and for the next, between now and the time they plant a spring crop. And, of course, the run-up we've seen in wheat prices of late has been a good thing for sellers anyway. And we just need to see where we stand in about 30 to 60 days. You know, the Kansas Wheat Tour is coming up. We have other people be watching that crop closely and be making the best judgments we can on what to do.
I'm sure we'll ask you more about that in the months coming along. Let's talk about, speaking of prices, the price of ethanol, which has jumped around quite a bit, but is well below, I think, the price of RBOB gasoline now.
Yes, when you go all the way back to February of last year, we've had a ratio of about anywhere from about 0.8 to 1.0, even basically ethanol being even with RBOB. Well, here since the first of the year, we've seen that relationship fall below 0.8. Here in March, on March 1st, it was about 0.79, and here on yesterday's closes, we were down to just about 0.7, 0.71. So basically, $1.43 ethanol and $2.01 RBOB. So RBOB with strong prospects for domestic fuel use, no doubt being supported. Ethanol with fairly sizable stocks on hand, just so in terms of prices. And I guess it is as it is. And in terms of how those two work out and how they affect the profitability of these ethanol plants.
When you look forward into the fall, and we only have about a minute left here, do you see a good or a fair prospect or something else for ethanol?
Economic prospects look pretty good. So you would think gasoline price demand and to the degree it supports ethanol would be good. We here in Kansas, you folks in Illinois, wondering where the corn price is going to go. Where's corn production going to go? The safe bet right now is that we would avoid a drought. We'd have sizable crops, relatively low corn prices. The profitability of ethanol plants in that type of scenario would be moderate to positive. What could change that is, by golly, if we do get dry conditions, corn jumps up, and then we crunch some profit margin.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again in a month.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien. He's with Kansas State University. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. When we come back, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He is at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 27th day of March. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. We've got rain and wet, and, well, it's warm, but I guess it's going to change. How about you in your area?
Well, a little bit of everything, as you'd expect late March to be like really an active and
pretty typical pattern as we go to the last days of March and look forward to the new month of April next week. As we look at the weather west to east, we just saw quite a bit of rain late last week in the western areas of the United States that really needed it, like California. And part of that weather has moved into the southern plains. Happy to report there's actually going to be some rainfall in areas that haven't seen it in a long time. Places like West Texas, Panhandle of Texas, areas of New Mexico with a little bit of shower activity making it into winter wheat areas of Oklahoma, Kansas as well. They need a lot more, but at least they got a little bit on the way. That weather is now going to move into the lower Mississippi Valley Delta areas and the central, southern, and eastern Corn Belt, where there's going to be more precipitation coming here in the coming days.
Just exactly how much, and we can start in that Arkansas area where it's been wet and then work our way to Ohio, I suppose, and parts of the Delta region.
Well, certainly that Arkansas, southern Missouri area, east Texas, northern Louisiana, they are looking at rainfall amounts that could be 2 to 4 inches over the next 5 to 7 days, probably more coming mid to late next week after that. The wettest areas of the nation will be in those areas I just mentioned, and then that will extend north and east into southern Illinois, most of Indiana, and Ohio. We could see rainfall amounts that are going to be in that 3 to 4 inch range total over the next 10 to 14 days. So the southern and eastern areas of the Corn Belt down into the Delta are going to be the wettest. We do see, on the flip side, drier conditions from northern Missouri to central northern Illinois into Iowa, Minnesota, the eastern Dakotas, eastern Nebraska. They're not going to be faring as well.
Will they remain cold?
They will remain cold, although there's going to be a lot of up and down. There is plenty of cool air in the equation in terms of what we're seeing over the next couple of weeks from the Rockies east and into the Plain States. Overall, temperatures are likely going to be averaging a bit below average, really areas from the Plain States to the Great Lakes and the Ohio Valley and Corn Belt area. Not extremely far below, but at the same time, no extended periods of warm spring weather anytime soon, at least for the next week or two.
And finally, before I let you go, sometimes we talk about the snowpack at this time of year and it's melting. Any worries there?
Really, only in the far northern Rockies and the far northern areas of the Pacific Northwest are snowpacks above normal. They've had a really good year, especially north of Interstate 90 across the northern tier. The central and southern areas of the Rockies, the central southern snowpack areas, Sierra snowpack, all are going to likely end up the season below average.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Days with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. As we close out our time together, reminder to visit our website at willag.org, especially on Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Central Time, or to follow my Twitter feed at Commodity Week. I'll update the acreage and grain stocks figures as they're released from USDA.